Dynasty Radio, 1382.
We gotta bless this function before we get things jumping. Invoking our ancestors in all the great loved ones we love. Fill up my cup, yeah. Gonna pour out some vinegar and call on the great ones for them to be with us. We got the spirit so high. It's a celebration. You got me feeling so nice. When we pour a libation, I go, amen. I go, amen. I'm calling out. And what's up? Open the way to tell the truth. I shake my kid. I shake every attack. I shake and throughout it. I shake. We respect your knowledge and we seek your wisdom. We invoke your presence to protect and guide. We got the spirit so high in this celebration. And you can
understand you by and by. and keep on wishing. Remember your dream is your only king, so keep on pushing. Take nothing less than the supreme best. Do not obey, no mistakes are safe, but you can pass the test. Just move on up to a greater day. With just a little faith, if you put your mind to it, you can surely do it.
Good evening, family. This is Paula Massey with the Education of the Miseducated Systems. You're listening to Dynasty Radio 1382, the revolutionary radio for revolutionary people. This is a live call-in talk show. And if you want to speak to us today, you want to leave a comment, ask a question, just call in. The number is 646-716-7572. Press the number 1 and we'll put you in queue. I'm going to get back to our program today. I enjoy always having my listening audience today, and today we're going to have a guest speaker today. Somebody's going to come in and we're going to talk. Today we're going to be talking about the role of the black man in the life of youth, black young boys. And we're also going to be discussing a village. What is the village? Okay, and what is the village to do in times like this? You know, the things that we've been going through for the past 2 years. And you know what? A lot of people are saying this is stuff that has been happening all along with the police brutality. And yes, it is. And I'm seeing that it has been happening all along. But I'm so glad that what I didn't know, what a lot of us didn't know, people are now speaking up and they're taking the opportunity to speak up and share with us what has been going on since, wow, beginning of time, you could even say. So basically, we're going to, I know Marcus is on the phone. Marcus, are you there? Hello?
Yes.
Hi, Marcus. How are you doing today? Yeah, I hear you. This is Marcus. I'm going to go ahead and introduce you right now, okay?
Okay.
Okay, this is Marcus Banks Bay, and I met Marcus back in 2013. He was teaching some classes, but prior to that, he had Dr. Hiawatha Tamini, also known as was Booker Coleman, Booker T. Coleman?
Dr. Booker T. Coleman, Dr. Kaba Hiawatha Kamene, correct.
Kamene, Dr. Kaba Hiawatha Kamene, yes. And I met him when he brought him to Fresno, our little town above me, Fresno, California. And it was this. I'm glad that you brought him there. I mean, it just opened my eyes and some of my other friends' eyes to what the educational system was all about. And then your spiritual leader was also there. What was his name again?
His name is Reverend Dr. A.J. Farma of the Holy Coptic Church.
Farma. Yes, yes. That was also good. I mean, it was all good. And then the classes that you taught. I know that you've been really, really busy.
Extremely busy.
Yeah. And I was just looking at your I was looking at your page, and I was looking at your bio, the things that you're involved in. I'm like, oh, my goodness. And you just took on the crisis service worker in Tulare County?
Yeah, that's right. I work as a mental health evaluator, so to speak, psychiatric emergency technician or crisis worker.
So I know you see a lot of stuff going on in Tulare County.
I do. Sometimes it's disheartening, but other times it's a result of the human condition. And I say that I get paid to do what I would like to do, not getting paid. So the work that I do, I've been able to kind of fuse my career with my desire to help fallen
Thank you. Yeah, and I know that, and I'm looking at the part-time chaplain at Kaiser. I mean, you just got it going on. I'm not sure whether you're still doing all this. I don't see how you could do it all at one time, but who am I to talk in all the different hats I'm wearing?
Exactly.
But
it's
amazing, because when I see other people doing all this stuff, I'm like, wow, how can they do that? And then people look at what I'm doing, and they say, wow, how can she do that?
Right.
But it's just something that we enjoy doing, something that we love to do, and our heart is there. So a lot of times, even though we're busy, it's not work. When I say work, like
right.
that, I hate to be here, I don't want to be here, why am I even here, that kind of thing. It's something that you look forward to because you look forward to helping people in your community.
Exactly.
Right. Okay, so basically what I'm going to talk about today, and I'm glad that you're here with me, and I sent you the message out, and I wanted to talk about the positive role of the Black man in the lives of Black boys. And we're also going to talk a little bit about what is a village. I know somebody had posted something about Hillary Clinton. I know back years ago she did a speech on It Takes a Village to Raise a Child. And even she wrote a book recently, It Takes a Village to Raise a Child. So I listened to that speech that she was given, and I really couldn't finish it all. I mean, because I don't understand where she was going with it. But so we're going to talk about that, because when some people talk about village, it means one thing to them. I want to know, what does it mean to us? What can this word, It Takes a Village, that phrase, what does it mean to us? But first of all, I want to talk about the positive role and the positive role of Black men in the lives of our young Black boys. And I want to preface it like this. I just started yesterday testing a young African-American boy on his math skills. Mm-hmm. He's going to eighth grade in our community, and he was going to a football camp, and he told the gentleman at the football camp, I need help. I need help with my math. I'm going to the eighth grade. They keep passing me, and I can't do the work. So this is a little eighth grader, going to eighth grade, a Black boy saying, I need help. Mm-hmm. Living on the south side of Hanford in the projects, he comes to us and say, he needs help. So they got him some help that he could need, but then they called me because their intern, this young man who referred this little boy to me, he works for Andy Vidak. He's our assemblyman in our district. And they've been helping, so they called on me and our organization to help this young boy. So I've been testing him, and he does need help with his math. He knows the math, he works it out, but he's very, very slow, and I'm concerned about a lot of the work he does know, but he's so slow. And because he's so slow, that could be a problem with the school, because the teachers have to get from point A to point B in 9 months.
Right. Yeah.
And if Johnny is still stuck in between, I mean, he's not moving as fast as the other classes, and no doubt a whole lot of other students. And then I'm afraid that eventually they'll start labeling this young boy. So we're going to talk about
the role. They haven't labeled him already.
Exactly. So we have a strong Black man in our community. His name is Damian Douglas. He used to be a professional football player. He took it upon himself to give this boy the help that he needs, and that isn't calling me. But talk to me about what you feel the positive role of the Black man in the lives of the Black boys. And before you get there, I want to let the audience know, this is still, even though this is the education of the miseducated system, this is something that we need to know, because we also need to be educated, because we've been raised in the miseducated system to think that we can send our children to the public school and they'll take care of everything. We're going to send them there for 7 to 8 hours a day, and they're going to educate our children and in turn educate us on how we're supposed to educate our children. So this is all a part of the education of the miseducated system. Now, go ahead, Marcus. Go ahead and tell me what you think.
Certainly, and thank you. I really appreciate you giving me this opportunity to be on your show once again. I know it's been quite some time since we've been able to get together in this way, and it's a kind of a testament of the work that we're doing. But just being able to come back together, that means so much. As a, Black man, Nubian man, more African American, whatever, we decide to call ourselves in this day and time.
Right.
I have I've dedicated myself, number one, to simply becoming a better person. But that dedication has come in response to being a father. I didn't realize how important my father was in my life until I became a father. And so what's happening, and it's been systematic, if you're familiar with, as we all should be, the institution of slavery, of chattel slavery, and even when you look at the writing of the Willie Lynch letter, and if we're familiar with that, whether it be true or not, we still see it within the system of slavery. The true purpose of that system was to divide the family and place the male, the female against one another. Okay, the male and female being against one another, first of all, if the man is removed from the nuclear family, then a woman cannot protect herself. And that's the reason why you see more of our men victimized than the females. However, females, our sisters, our divine sisters, are being victimized in an increasing rate because we've been removed. So we have to find our way back to the home and to our family for the sake of our children and for the sake of protecting. If we're not protecting and we're not providing, then we're not men in the eyes of our family. That's number one. So in seeing my father in that role, protecting, providing, instructing, fulfilling that masculine role, that's what we need to be able to do again. Totally against the feminization of our young boys. And there's a reason why that's happening. It's because of the removal of the man, and the women cannot be expected to play that role. We're asking too much of our divine sisters, of our divine feminine, and we're expecting them to fulfill the role that we are supposed to be doing naturally and gendered. So I myself, I have been married for 6 years now. And, you know, to say that I am continuing to grow in my role as a husband and in my role as a father. I mean, growth is natural. If you're not growing, then you're dead. And I have to ensure that I'm fulfilling their expectations. I'm making sure that I'm protecting them. I'm providing for them. And I'm instructing them in the ways of what works for us as a people. And what is that? In teaching our heritage, teaching our great legacy, and making sure that the educational system is not the only system that we're relying upon to teach our children. Like Dr. Kaba, he said, and he's a educator himself, he said he sends his children to school for just the social aspect, not because it is the 100% all-encompassing educational process that they need. They need friends. That's very important. But we should be instructing in the home, number one. And number two, we should be able to instruct our children as to their naturally engendered role. Women should not be expected or instructed on becoming a man or that becoming of age process, and boys surely shouldn't be instructed on how to become a woman or anything of that sort. We are blessed with our gender, with our masculinity, for sisters, with your femininity, and we have to embrace that. And I think that's where it starts, providing that divine example in the home.
Okay. So Dr. Kaba sent his children to school just for socialization, huh?
Yeah, for socialization.
Wow.
And then, of course, you know, we have to meet the standard. Say, for instance, I'm finishing my Master's of Divinity. Everything that they're teaching me in this master's program, I don't agree with. As a matter of fact, there's only a small portion of it that I agree with. However, I know how to function within it. And it's helping me understand particular religious systems, namely Westernized, Europeanized Christianity. But I, however, teach my people African Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to know how to navigate through the system and play the game, so to speak, so that we can legitimize ourselves through the disciplining process of education. And that's really all it's about.
Yeah, I picked up a book a few years back, and when I was living in Phoenix, it was talking about the welfare system. And in that book, it talked about the beginning of the welfare system, where we got the system from Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And we had it over here. And when we first started this, it was for the women whose husbands were going to war during World War One.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just supposed to help them. And then it's extended to women and children.
Right.
And then it kept evolving itself into where it is right now. And mm-hmm. back in that time, it was never intended to be what it is now. A handout. Mm-hmm. And some people use it as a hand up, which is very good. And I'm glad that they have the system, because a lot of people nowadays do need that assistance.
That's right.
But we have so many people abusing it. But I remember growing up in New York, and I remember, especially in Florida, and our neighbors across the street, this is when the social workers would come out to the house. And if you're getting food stamps, the food stamps were the paper food stamps, which you paid a small fee to get. You paid money for food stamps. You may pay $15, you may get $70 worth of food stamps. That's
right.
How it rolled. And they would come out to the house, and I remember the lady across the street from us, she had a Thunderbird. And the Thunderbird that looked like the airplane in the back, so it was like a 70-something, I don't know what year that was. I didn't like those cars, but anyway. She would hide her car down the street, around the corner. She had her garage fixed up like a game room. She had pool tables and everything. That door was locked and bolted like it was a garage and never been in. Okay. They had to hide stuff. And she had a boyfriend, but none of his stuff could be in that house, because they would go to your house. They would go to your closets. So it was a way of keeping the man out of the house. You could not you could not get the help that you needed as a black woman if your black man was in the house with you. He had to be gone. And so what I was reading in this book, and it is true how the men, they left their homes. Baby, I know you need to be taken care of right now. I'm not working. I can't provide. And this is the only way that my children could get the help that they need, is if I move away. So they move away and they go to another state or whatever. And he finds himself another family, because now he's involved with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had to leave his family. Now the same thing is happening with him in another place. Now he got an extended family. So
right.
I see that that was one way they kind of removed the man out of the house, so the woman and the child could eat the little crumbs that they
gave. Because their whole, scheme, if you will, was to break apart the black family, the nuclear family. It was a result of the CIA and the FBI coming together to create these social institutions to basically tear apart the black for the sake of maintaining that power, control, and dominance. Because, again, the civil rights movement, all of that was just tearing America apart, in the sense that we have the natural inclination to, should I say, to fight for justice for ourselves. So that's what I mean by that. So when you say that, you know, the women had to pay for their food stamps, pay 15 cents. Now, the bigger price is they have to not have the man in the home. And what does that do? That devalues and does not legitimize the man or the male presence, and makes it appear as though the man is only good for bringing in money. Now, that is one of our roles, to be able to provide. But once you only place the value of a man as a monetary figure, then you convince yourselves that you don't need a man. Well, if you can provide for yourself, then in a sense, you don't need a man, but what happens to your feminine role? How well are you able to protect yourself? How well are you able to protect your children if now you have to work 8, 10, 12 hours a day, sometimes more for women who have to work more than one job?
Mm-hmm.
What's happening to the children? Who's teaching
right.
the children? Where are they at for that long period of time? And then second to that, are you able to fulfill your motherly obligation? So if we were actually to get back, there's a sister, her name is, let me say it for you right, Ro Elry Cutno. That's Roelory Cutno. And she wrote a book called...
Spell that last name again.
Cutno, Cutno, N as in November.
Okay, got it. Okay.
She sells a book on Amazon. You can get it fairly inexpensively for through your Kindle reader if you prefer to have it on paperback, whatever, that's your choice. I bought the book. And I bought the book because I was in communication with this author, and she posts a lot of controversial posts, because, and the only reason why they're controversial to nowadays, because sisters have been convinced that they don't need a man, as much as men have been convinced that they don't need a woman. I call them both crazy, because I need a woman. I need my wife.
Uh-huh.
I need my wife to be able to, that will allow for me to be a man, right? So she wrote a book, Manly. Now, it's the full title is Man Leads, Woman Follows, Everyone Wins. The concept of this book, should I say the precept of this book, is taking it back to an idea, the fundamental of allowing for a man to be a man and a woman to be a woman. She interviewed, it was a study that she performed worldwide, 1,000 men from various cultures, not just those of the diaspora, but Japanese, Indian, and European, so on and so forth. And she found that there is a blanket, and these men had to meet a particular criteria of being healthy men, because people categorize good differently. Right, but healthy men, which entail is a good man. All of their lifestyles followed suit in a particular way. Now, these men were masculine. They provided for their family. Say, for instance, they offered their wife 40 hours of their time during the week, 10 hours to themselves, and 15 hours for their children. They had a particular lifestyle, right? The woman did not work or only worked part-time so that she could focus on house, home, family, right? Because if you ask any woman in today's time, she is totally wiped out when she comes home from work. And what time is left to be able to provide for the family? Being a wife and a mother is a full-time job. And they'll tell you that. When you look at statistics, women feel like they have two jobs. They're working 80 hours a week. Why? Because they're putting 40 hours in at home and 40 hours in at work. So when you remove the man from the home, then what happens? It forces her into the position to have to provide and protect, right? So we have to be able to get back to being in the home, right? The woman verbalizing that she needs a man if she wants to be a healthy woman in a sense. And a man saying the same thing in retrospect. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
So that is important that we get back to some basic fundamentals, because the woman empowerment movement that was actually institutionalized by the CIA to bring the black woman out of the black power struggle, can actually see a portion of this if you go and watch Hidden Colors 2. They brought the black woman out of the black power struggle, out of the civil rights struggle, and inserted her and convinced her that her fight was for woman's rights, right?
Right. Woman's rights.
Right. And I'm not saying that women shouldn't have rights. I'm not saying that at all. However, that fight, the European woman never included the black woman in that fight, in that struggle. That was her fight with her man because they were being victimized and abused and everything else that came with a patriarchal Europeanized system. Whereas within our systems, and I'm not saying that there isn't domestic violence and we don't have our issues. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying throughout history, our family systems are matriarchal, meaning that the presence of the woman guides the family structure and family life. Whereas there is a rulership and there is a leader. And those are our respective roles. And that's what we have to get back to. We have to get back to thinking as Africans.
And you know, you're absolutely right, because when I'm thinking, when I was married years ago, that there were two of us, my husband mm-hmm. and myself. He laid the law down. I made sure the law was given, and I made sure the law was followed.
You implemented it, right?
And it was on me to implement it, because where mm-hmm. he's out working, he's out providing.
Exactly.
He was in the military. He's gone for mm-hmm. 6 months out of the year,
mm-hmm.
and I had to make mm-hmm. sure that law's, because when things were out of kilter, it's coming back on me. And if I mm-hmm. tried to do something undercover. I mean, my boys always, they showed me up, and I was like, I get so upset. I'm like, man, I'm trying to help you guys out. But this law your dad has laid down, and now y'all go back, and now you're making me look crazy. So I realized
that
whatever. So what I had to do is make sure that whatever he laid down, we would discuss it. If I felt it was too harsh or it didn't make sense, but whatever mm-hmm. the last thing that was said, I followed that.
Right.
So absolutely right. So you know what? I'm looking at this, and you're saying this stuff, and I'm seeing now. We do have to have strong men. We do mm-hmm. have to have our strong black men. And if there are no men in the home, there's grandpas. If there's no grandpas, there's no uncles, there's no, you know, none of that, then our community, and this is where we get to the village part.
Right, exactly.
This is where we get to the village, because if you just look in my little community, how many actually black families have a mother and a father there? And when I see that, when I go to the store and I see a husband, I see a wife or a male and a female with kids together, my heart just like breaks. I don't have that, and I want that.
Mm.
I mean, my kids are grown,
mm-hmm.
but you mm-hmm. said one thing. Having a man will make knowing that you need a man will help you to be a healthy woman.
Exactly. What do I have
and
to
I,
do?
And I really it? Believe that.
Mm-hmm. Through my studies as being a pastoral counselor, because I'm also a chaplain and also, working in the field of psychology, the reality is like minds attract, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which means that if you have a foul mind, then you're going to attract somebody with a foul mind and a foul way of doing things. And I'm saying foul just in the sense that, you know, unhealthy living. Let's just put it that way. Whereas a healthy-minded person is going to attract another healthy-minded individual and also be able to see the signs of someone who is unhealthy and be able to repel that. So a lot of people, a lot of men, a lot of brothers, a lot of sisters will say, well, why do I keep getting these type of people in my life? It's because you are allowing them in your life. You are the gatekeeper to who is going to, who you will be associating with. Because you come in contact with, you know, dozens of people throughout the day and hundreds of people online, but you choose the type of person that you're going to have in your life. So there's a sense of responsibility. And if you are attracting unhealthy people, then there's something that is unhealthy about yourself that you are going to have to become more insightful to. And fix that.
Right. So let's go into the village, and let me share with you. I was looking, like I said, Hillary Clinton, she wrote the book, It Takes a Village to Raise a Child.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was listening to the speech, and she was talking about being in Chicago. I'm happy about this village.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, Chicago is like the family. You know, you're hard on the outside, but when it comes to the children, you're so mushy, and you're so loving towards the children. So I'm listening to this stuff, and I kind of turned it off because she was just selling a lot of stuff. You know, just selling.
Mm-hmm.
Selling stuff to get the people up, you know, up and moving around, say, yay, whatever she was doing. But I was looking at the word village, and when I looked up the word village in the dictionary online, I go to a couple mm-hmm. of different dictionaries. And
as we should do.
Yeah. And it says, it talked about the type of area that a person lives in. They talked about a village compared to a city, compared to a township, you know, that kind of
right.
stuff. I'm like, that's not what I want. That's not what I'm looking for. So
mm-hmm.
I typed in,
mm-hmm.
It takes a village. What is that? What does that mean? What does that phrase mean? And it said it was a proverb that leverages the cultural context and belief that it takes an entire community
right.
to raise a child. A child has the best ability to become healthy adults if the entire community takes an active role in contributing to the rearing of the child. So use the word community. So I said, well, let me go back to the word community. Because sometimes, you know, I like to look up the words because what I think the word means, somebody else might think it means something else. So we could all come to some type of agreement of when we're trying to build something, we have to come to some type of agreement of what is it that we're trying to do, what are we building upon?
Right.
So I looked at the word community, and a community says the people living in one locality. And it says a group of people having cultural, religious, ethnic, and other characteristics in common. Okay.
Right.
A group of nations having certain interests in common, common ownership or participation, similarity or agreement
mm-hmm.
of community
mm-hmm.
interests. So those are the things that I looked at. And I'm like, well, now I'm talking. That's what I want to talk about.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
how can we come together as the village when we say, oh, it takes a village to raise a child? I just don't want to just spew those words out. I want them to mean something, and I want other people to know that they mean something, and we could call them together and pull together. So my question is, in the sense that women are left here with their children, now this little boy that I'm working with, he's with his grandmother, with his siblings.
Mm-hmm.
His mom is wherever. His dad is, we don't know where. But now it's
mm-hmm.
up to the grandma to raise these young kids. And she's had a stroke. She's doing the best that she can. And they're all boys. Okay?
Sure. Yeah.
She had four boys. One just graduated. So now she got the eighth grader, and she got two other smaller ones. So
mm-hmm.
what is the village to do in a situation like that?
You know, I was starting a nonprofit that was focused on this issue, which was the absence of the male in the home, the absence of the male in the community as a result of whatever the environment imposed. Okay. The way that we address this issue is for men number one, see their value and see their need once again. Because the reality is, what's happening in our homes is that the black man is being devalued, being emasculated, he's being removed, he's being threatened by a system which, because the black man is threatening the system, and that system is to have total domination and control over the lives of our children, right? We have to position ourselves to be able to be responsible to more than just our own children, because the most important thing about the village are the children, because they are the guarantee of our survival.
Mm-hmm.
They are who will be left once the grandmothers, the fathers, the mothers, the aunts and the uncles expire. And what we have to do is begin to shape a healthy environment once again. And when I say a healthy environment, I'm not talking about climate change. I'm not talking about anything other than what's happening in the home and in the neighborhood, and even in the mother's womb. The environment begins at the point of conception, even prior to that, but I'm not going to go that deep. But when we are looking at the fetal development, the heart and the brain and the emotional system, right? When we're looking at that, these things begin to develop in the mother's womb. So if the mother is undergoing stress, right, if she's in an unnatural way of living and operating, then that child is receiving that same stress and is subconsciously interpreting its environment as a stressful environment. And this is why we see high rates of heart disease and high blood pressure as a result of the way that we are brought into the world. So it starts as early as when conception takes place. And then that's why relationships are so important. On my YouTube page, I'm going to begin to talk more about relationships. The man has to reinsert himself into the lives of the families once again and find his place and know that he is needed. And the woman has to validate that also, and not be so angry because of the absence of her own father or whatever wound she has received to say that she doesn't need a man, where really what she's saying is, I want to protect myself in an instance where I felt unprotected. So we have to stop the fighting. We have to heal ourselves, most importantly, right? And we have to get back to a communal operation, that village, which is so important, the culture, right? We're kind of duped into this this idea of social media. I mean, we're more plugged in and tuned in to these electronic devices and not really engaged in our neighborhood. And here's the thing. We have friends lists of 1,000 people and so on and so forth. When you think of a village, you don't think of anything more than maybe at max 100 to 200 people.
Right. Okay.
And those people, there was a relationship that they had with one another, that they have. And we have to see one another as family. That's why we always call ourselves brother, sister, you know, Baba as in father, or Bibi as in mother, because we always identified ourselves as family. And that's what's so important. When the woman, say, for instance, let's take it back a little bit. When the men would leave the village, what would happen with the women? The women would come together with the children, right? And that's where the schools began, right? Because the women were in charge of that. And there was reassurance in the women being able to come together. But now you got sisters that are, you know, nodding heads and fighting amongst themselves, and they can't come together because of whatever difference.
Right.
So we have to see that, or should I say realize, that we need one another. We have to get back into needing healthy relationships and needing the presence of both the male and the female. And the men have to be raised in their self-esteem, raised in their self-worth, and really have to go under a guidance or mentorship program to get back into the position of leadership once again.
You know, you just said a mouthful, and, you know, you really... No, I'm serious. This is all good, because I'm gonna be a little bit transparent here right now, because I have a son, 37 years old, who has a little boy was going to be two in November.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, to me, he's the best father. But this young girl doesn't understand that she has a, I mean, if you don't want to be with him, I understand that, but allow him to be with his son. He's teaching him to read, and he, my son is teaching him a lot of different things. So he comes over to my house, a little boy. The first thing he does, he goes to my African drum, goes to all of my instruments, and he wants to play my djembe. So I'm teaching him how to hold the djembe. I'm teaching
him.
He's well, my son is black, and this young girl, she's Native American.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm teaching this stuff when he comes, but for some reason, she doesn't feel the need to let him see the baby only when she wants to. But what you just
said, that's the wrong answer.
Our man needs to be needed.
Yeah.
And when he doesn't get a chance to see his baby, I mean, he goes into a deep, dark, funky place that
mm-hmm.
I don't like to see.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
I can't hardly pull him up out of that place.
Right.
But when he sees that boy, he's like a different person. I mean, this whole week, I'm like, wow, I'm liking you this week because
mm-hmm.
did you see the baby? Well, yeah, I saw the baby. He's happy and everything. So I know as a mom, and he's always said, Mom, can you please help? And I'm, you know, what we do is we leave it to them. Well, you're grown. You know, this
mm-hmm.
is, you got to handle your business.
Mm-hmm.
But we know things as parents, and
exactly.
they're always going to be our children. So
and
some,
he needs that
point,
wisdom also, because you've been
exactly.
Through, you know how it looks.
Exactly, I know, and I have to go, and I'm a woman, and she's
mm-hmm.
a woman, and we're
mm-hmm.
not so far off the radar that we don't know what women do. Okay,
right, yep.
We know who we are. We know when we see a woman doing a certain thing, we know what that means. So
mm-hmm.
I'm looking at this, and I'm like, ah, he's been telling me to step up to the plate as his mom, as a grandbaby,
mm-hmm.
and go talk
mm-hmm.
to this young girl.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Would you just mm-hmm. let me know? You confirm. I need to go ahead and do that. I need to make that appointment with her. I'll sit and talk with her and let her know. If you don't want to be with him, fine, but you have a baby together. And for the sake
yeah.
of the baby, that baby needs his father in the home. As he needs
Definitely.
To be, have that relationship with that man.
And that's
the
you
man that,
creating
that,
that
boy
love,
yeah.
again. Because
exactly.
she needs that wisdom from you. Because here's the thing. If she is doing that, then she's lacking guidance herself.
Yeah.
So she doesn't, it sounds like the both of them could use that eldership counsel from you. So that
right.
is you reunifying and bringing that village concept, because you all could be the best of, the best friends when it comes down to how your grandson is being raised. D.L. Hewley, I like to listen to comedy because sometimes you got to make people laugh in the reality of tragedy. And
right.
But in his intelligence, he said the best way to get rid of a man or anyone for that fact is to devalue them. When they feel like they're not needed, it makes it easier for them to leave.
Exactly.
So when you reassure them of their value, and of your need for them, then they will be that much more compelled to stay. But when we want to jump off on our ego trips and we want to try to convince ourselves that we're this super person and this and that, then it leaves away an avenue for the women to be abused and victimized, as well as the children. Most children grow up having this issues as adults because the parents failed to protect them in some way or another. So most of us grow up having these wounds that are carried over from our nuclear family because our parents failed to do something in an instant, something that should have happened that didn't, or something that didn't happen that should have. But we can fix
that. You're absolutely right. And you know, I was talking to a few young ladies. We have a program in my town called Sisters Speak, and
mm-hmm.
it just started out with a few people. And I went to a workshop in Fresno at the museum, and I think there was Francina Puta, Dr. Francina Puta. She was speaking on "I Am Not My Hair," and I wanted
mm-hmm.
to bring that program to Hanford. So we did it one time, but it's been almost a year now, and we still holding this meeting. We have women coming from all different in the community. And we're talking about some of the issues that we deal with.
Yeah.
And I brought up an issue that I didn't speak up on, and we were talking, and it made me think that I should have did something. I was in Staples one day, and I was getting some copies made, and I heard this music, and it was kind of weird that Staples would be playing this rap music, you know, hip-hop music. And I'm like, mm-hmm. okay. But then when I looked and I turned, it was a young sister sitting at a computer. I'm not sure whether she was filling out an application or whether she was sitting a fax. I'm not sure what she was doing. Mm-hmm. But she was sitting there, and the music was coming from her. It was her music. Mm-hmm. And it was loud enough that I looked over at the guy behind the counter, and he didn't say anything. But I'm looking at the way she was dressed. It looked like she had her pajamas on. It was the middle of the day. You know how we're starting to wear these pajama things out, and, you know, our hair is up all over our head and everything.
And everything else.
Yeah. And I, you know, I looked at that, and I, in my mind, I'm like, man, she needs to shut it down. But as a woman, I should have taken the initiative to go over there and say, hey, my sister, put my arm around on her shoulder, whatever, and say, you know what? I hear you over here jamming. And but you know what? There's a lot of people here that, you know, really, that music is really, really too loud. So if you could just turn it down just a little bit, I mean, and not offend her, but let her know that the music was really loud. Maybe she didn't realize how loud it was.
And I'm sure she would have expected that from you.
Yeah, but I didn't do it. For whatever reason, I didn't do it. And when I don't do what I know I'm supposed to do as a sister, it haunts me. The next day, I think about it. And there's nothing I can do about what happened the day before because it's already gone.
Exactly.
So we as women and men in our community, when we see our young people, not just little kids, but young people, young families, we need to step up to the plate. I remember one time sitting in church, and this lady, I went to go visit a friend's church, and this girl was sitting behind me with her baby, and she kept slapping, stop, sit down, be quiet, stop, sit down, be quiet, stop, sit down, be quiet, the whole thing. And I'm like, turned, I said, oh, can I hold your baby for you? I took action to give this little mama a break, and didn't realize now that she's young, married, got these little babies. Her husband is on the boat for 6 months plus.
Oh, wow.
So she's sitting up here in the church. She's trying to hear the service, and the babies are doing what babies do.
Right, exactly.
But she needed help. She needed somebody to come on. And I'm not a member of that church. But I go to visit. I used to go visit them. So I just turned around and asked, could I take your baby for you? You know, so
but
she could have a break.
Aspect.
And that's what she needed.
Yeah. Right. And here's the village aspect with that. Our churches were our community center, provided services, provided clothing, provided for the need or those who were in need. Churches nowadays are more focused on providing for themselves, unfortunately. So a sister who is there in the church and has a baby that, you know, irate or uncomfortable or however, because that child ain't programmed, ain't ready to sit down and listen to anything. That child wants to play active. It's just nothing but a ball of energy. And our churches are not answering the need of our families. And I'm not going to blanket that. Plenty of churches are. Many of churches aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And so that need has to be present. Our churches have to be that village center, that community center, has to be willing to provide those services and provide that mentorship, provide the daycare, right, the extra food or allowances or however. Those things have to be in place. But when those churches are more interested in, you know, talking a good game just to get people in there but not doing anything for the people, then our people remain underserved.
You know, you're absolutely right. And then I talked to my family, my audience family, about that. If you cannot find a place where you can get this help that you need, or even in homeschooling your children, you feel like this is something that you can't do because you have to work those, you're a single parent, you have to work those 2-3 jobs. There's a community of people out there that look like you, that think like you, that want for you, your family, what you want for your family, because they want the same thing for their family. You need
right.
the guys that need to come together. It may not be during the week, but you have 2 days out of the week that a lot of people are not working. So you got to create something. If your churches are not doing it, and And, you know, and I always go back to Nat Turner. I always go back to him and how he was a preacher. But when he came into that pulpit, he wasn't just talking about the Christianity. He talked about the community.
Right.
He had, because they left him, the master left him alone because he said, he's a good little nigga. He ain't going to cause no problem. So they left him and let him go all the different rounds of these different churches preaching what they said he was doing. But he was sharing wisdom with his community. And I feel like these pastors today have an obligation. I tell them, have an obligation to talk to your community, your congregation about what's going on in the community, what's going on in the world. Not what happened 2,000 plus years ago on a place called we call Calvary. That was then, now, then. This is now. Yeah. Calvary's now, whatever you want to call it. Something's happening now. And I always talk to them about what's happening in Ferguson, what's happening in New York, Staten Island, all these different places with our young men and our young women also that are being murdered. It hasn't hit Fresno like it is. Fresno's bigger than Hanford, and it definitely hasn't hit Hanford like that. But when it comes, we need to be prepared. What are we going to do? We can't run together now. What are we going to do? We have to be proactive and come together as a community. Come together as a village and have a plan of action. This is what we're going to do. You had a young man at one of your classes, and I always think about this when I go into Winco, because I go into Winco and I see they had this food already packaged up, these gallons of stuff that all you do is you don't even have to have hot water. You just pour water in there, and you have instant food. He talked about storing canned goods and dishes things up for when that time comes. He doesn't have to run and scrape and run to the store and everything is off the shelf. He already has the stuff there.
Right.
And, you know, I thought he was going to come back and teach on that because I was very, very interested in that.
You know, I was too. And that family now, they're living in Texas now.
Wow.
So, yeah, they've moved on and moved forward. But, you know, it doesn't mean that we can't have that. One blessing of the Holy Spirit, if you wish to call it that, is that it guides us. And Paula, I'm in my last two classes of my master's program. So a lot of time is going to be freed up for me where I can get back into the community and I can get back to having these classes, visiting with your village and putting together, like I said, my teachings and whatnot and getting this back going because the time is now and we need it more now than any because things are not getting better. By better, I mean we are not providing for ourselves and we are not in the position of power. So we have to get ourselves back into those positions, and I want to continue to help with that. So whatever information that you have with your classes and with your events, please get that to me because, like I said, I've got a lot of time that's going to be freed up. And you know me, I always find something to do with my time.
I know. Well, Marcus, you know what? I want to thank you for being on the show with us. It was very, very wonderful. I thank you for bringing all this information. I thank you for helping me with some of the things that I need to step up to the plate with. And I really appreciate that. And to the family that's listening out there, let's take heed, knowing that if we could go back and look at history, the progression of where we are right now to where we are right now and what is happening, even with our young boys that are coming up in school, you know, the special ed, they put them in a dumbed-down class.
Right.
And then, you know, what time they graduate, they can't really go to college because they don't even have the classes that they needed to be able to go to college. So if they go, they got to take remedial classes that they're not
and
even getting credit for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so they get frustrated and drop out of college. Now they're not working. Now they're on the streets. And I don't know how long ago this somebody posted a video on here, but they were talking about three young men in a city standing in front of a store. They got arrested, and all they were doing is standing in front of the store waiting for a bus to come so they could go to school. Mm-hmm. Come on now.
Mm-hmm.
This is where it's going. And I always tell people, history is repeating itself. History is repeating itself. And if we want to get off this wheel, we're going to have to do something. Like you said, we're going to have to work within ourselves first, and then we can reach out and touch somebody else. Yeah.
Well, you know what? The more that we work for the sake of others, the more that we are able to work for ourselves as well. So I want to say thank you for, you know, inviting me on And, you know, in line with what you just said and what I just said, you know, we have to practice what we preach. Being on this planet is a hypocrite. And the more that we engage in the process of wanting to help others with truth, with knowledge, with wisdom, and with understanding, overstanding, then we will seek that for ourselves in order to give it to others. So it's a really healthy cyclic pattern in that respect. So with all that being said, sister, like I said, please forward me that info. And as my time comes available, you will definitely see me more.
Okay. And I'm still waiting for us to get together with Dr. Umar Johnson, bringing him to this community along with other different people. So we're going to be working together. Just go ahead and finish up doing what you're doing, and I'll do what I do, and we'll come back together again. Thank you, Marcus Banks Bay, for being on our show. I appreciate all your help. Okay. And family, we've been listening to the Education of the Miseducated System, the Revolutionary Radio for Revolutionary People. I'll see you on next Tuesday, and you have a good day. Thank you.
Bless.
Just move on up. Move on up. But move on up. Watch out, but just move on up. But move on up. Move on up.
Dynasty Radio, 1382.